The scripture today comes from Galatians 5, 1 through 9. For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand fast, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. Now I, Paul, say to you that if you receive circumcision, Christ will be of no advantage to you. I testify again to every man who receives circumcision that he is bound to keep the whole law. You are severed from Christ, you who would be justified by the law. You have fallen away from grace. For through the Spirit, by faith, we wait for the hope of righteousness. For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor non-circumcision is of any avail, but faith working through love. You were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? This persuasion is not from him who called you. A little yeast leavens the whole lump. Hear what the Spirit is saying.
We've been talking this month about hospitality, which is a core Christian spiritual practice in the Christian faith, as important as prayer or worship or giving or serving. As a matter of fact, hospitality is a core Judeo-Christian practice and value. And I'd like to try to apply this morning the idea of hospitality to our relationships. Relationships can be difficult. Or is that only true for me? Relationships with neighbors and co-workers, teachers and mentors, partners and spouses and friends. Relationships can be difficult, and maybe the Christian principle of hospitality can teach us something about how to do better with our relationships. And this is the first thing about hospitality that might help us. Hospitality frees people. Hospitality is a freeing relationship. The Apostle Paul says that when Christ invites us into relationship, Christ sets us free. For freedom, Christ has set us free. When Christ receives us, when Christ extends hospitality to us, Christ sets us free. Hospitality sets us free. Henry Nouwen wrote a book about hospitality called Reaching Out that I think is a spiritual classic. In the book, he tells the story of a student who was offered a place to stay by a couple while he was studying at a nearby university. Good example of hospitality, right? But Nouwen says after a few weeks of staying with the couple, the students realized that he was feeling oppressed. Over the years, the couple he was staying with had become so distant from each other, and they were so lonely in their own home that they were each trying to use the student to fill an emotional void in their lives. They each wanted his attention. They each clung to him. They each became jealous if they thought he was spending more time with one than another. Eventually, the student said he no longer felt free to come and go when he wanted. He found himself increasingly unable to concentrate on his studies or to pay enough attention to his host to satisfy them. And he said he even found himself unable to leave because he was afraid they'd become too hurt. And Nouwen says what this couple offered him was not hospitality, it was a form of slavery. Hospitality leaves room for another to be himself or herself. It does not demand that the other serve me or please me or fill a vacuum in my life. We had an annual conference here at the Baltimore-Washington conference a couple weeks ago. And one of the things we talked about was that a lot of United Methodist churches are having a hard time attracting younger members these days. Nationally, apparently, the average age of a United Methodist is now 57. I won't ask you to raise your hand if you're 57 or older, but if I did, not all of us would raise our hands here. Some United Methodists are afraid their congregations will die out when their generation does. And they become really desperate for younger members. They think that younger members will save them and their church. And because they're so desperate for younger members, this was reported to us, that what happens is that when a younger person actually walks in the door, they pay so much attention and become so clingy and so desperate for them to come back again that they actually drive most younger people away. Hospitality makes room for another, and it doesn't force them to be what we need them to be in order to do what we want to do or to fill an empty place within our own lives. I posted a blog to Facebook not long ago from Christian Century, written by a young pastor on the Christian Century magazine website, and it was entitled, "How Reaching Out to Young Adults Will Screw Up Your Church." And I actually want to read a few paragraphs from that blog to you. This young pastor writes and says, "Several of my young adult pastor friends tell about a time when one of them is hanging out around town, meeting new people, just being his cool, nerdy self, when someone finds out he is a pastor. And this person thinks the pastor is pretty hip, so she asks, 'Hey, can I come to your church?' The pastor sighs and says, 'Yes, but you've got to know, I'm really different at church.' These pastor friends, to survive in their parishes, have taken the edge off their preaching, their politics, their big ideas, even their theology. Though the pastors know young adults are drawn to their edgy, honest selves, they also know their more established members with the power and the checkbooks have other ideas. A lot would need to change for the pastor to be able to respond to his friend saying, 'Yes, please come to my church, you'd love it.' And if that gal at the bar would truly love it, what would the church's choir members think? Nothing personal." "I was once at a church-related event where young adults were going around the table introducing themselves to the group. One person shared his name and then said, 'And I want to be up front, I'm an atheist.' For a second, I held my breath to see what would happen next. Quickly, someone said, 'Great,' and another smiled and said, 'So glad you're here.' There were smiles all the way around the table. But I couldn't help but wonder how many congregations would welcome that young atheist with a genuine smile rather than a leeriness that he might infect the confirmation class with dastardly atheism-laced questions. Welcoming young adults that fit the perfect church visitor mold is easy. You know the type church members long for. Some magical newcomer who was raised in a perfect household, is married and not divorced, has a few kids, enjoys his well-paying job, and of course has orthodox, unquestioning beliefs. Fewer and fewer young adults fit this image, if anyone ever did. To welcome young adults these days, churches need to welcome the atheist, the single mom, the tattooed, the unemployed, and yes, the same-sex couple. So I posted that to Facebook, and I thought it was really interesting. I got a few comments. And here is a comment left on Facebook by one of our members here at Foundry who is in his 70s. Larry wrote, let me try to understand this blog post. Keep young people away so that we can be comfortable. Fear the atheist because our faith is weak, and then close our churches as the old die out. This was the exact point that the Apostle Paul was trying to make to the Galatians. If someone is trying to pressure you to think like them and to act like them and to be like them in order to be part of their community, that is not hospitality, it is not friendship, it is not a relationship, and it is not from Christ. It comes from that community's own insecurities. Hospitality creates free space for another. And in a friendship, a co-worker relationship, in a partnership, in a marriage, each person needs to be free to say what they think and to be who they are. That's what hospitality means. That's what friendship means. So that's one truth, one side of the coin. Hospitality sets us free. Christ sets us free. Hospitality offers free space to another. We can't be hospitable if we cannot let the other be other. We cannot be a friend if our friend cannot be who they are. So that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is this. In order to be hospitable to another, we need to be at home. Henry Nouwen says, we are not being hospitable when we leave our house to strangers and let them use it any way they want. An empty house is not an hospitable house. An empty house is not an hospitable house. He says the real host is one who offers that space where we do not have to be afraid and where we can listen to our own inner voices and find our own personal way of being human. But to be such a host, we have to, first of all, be at home in our own house. To be hospitable to another, we first of all need to be at home in our own house. To be a friend, we first need to be at home with our own soul. To be a partner or a spouse, we first need to be comfortable with who we are. There's a German Catholic theologian by the name of Johannes Baptist Metz. By the way, isn't Baptist a great middle name? If I could rename my kids, I'd give them the middle name Methodist. Johannes Baptist Metz says that in order to be hospitable to others, we need to be secure enough in our relationship with our own self and in our personal relationship with God so that people who are different will not frighten us. And this is a really interesting thing, I think he says. He says, otherwise, we will see in others only what we want to see and not what really is. Unless we have the capacity not to be afraid of other people, we will never even come to know them. Because we will only be able to see in them what we are comfortable seeing. And we will not be able to give them the freedom to be who they really are. One of the podcasts I listen to lots of podcasts, One of the podcasts I listen to is Bill Maher's show Real Time, which, by the way, you can get for free as a podcast. Bill Maher, for those of you who know him, is very anti-religion. Maybe some of you have seen his movie Religious, which Jane and I went to see and which I recommend. Sometimes when I listen to Bill Maher's show, he says these amazingly simplistic negative things about religion, and I find myself getting ticked off. And then when I take a minute to think about it, what I realize is that he has struck a place of insecurity within me as a person of faith. And the question that I need to ask is not why Bill Maher is so superficial, but why I am so insecure as to be threatened by some of the things he says. Henry Nouwen says that we cannot be hospitable to others unless we are okay with solitude. It's almost an irony. We cannot be with someone in a hospitable way unless we can be alone without them. We cannot be a friend unless we can be friendless too. We cannot be a lover unless we can manage to live our lives well without a lover. We need to be capable, we need to have within ourselves a capacity to be friendless in order to be a friend. We need to have within ourselves a capacity to be without a lover in order to really be able to love our lover. Being hospitable to another, giving them free space in our lives, does not mean that we stop being free. We need to still be able to think our thoughts, believe our beliefs, and be who we are, or it's not hospitality, it's not friendship, it's some sort of other transaction. Annual conference was a couple weeks ago. General Conference, which is the global gathering of United Methodist representatives to vote on United Methodist polity and policies and practices, was a couple months ago in Tampa. When I was in Tampa, it became clear that there's a divide, a gulf, between many of the United Methodist churches in the United States, especially those of us who are considered liberal, I'm not sure about that word all the time, or progressive. There's a gulf between us, especially those of us who are reconciling congregations, there's a gulf, a divide between us and our brother and sister, many of them, our brother and sister United Methodist in Africa, where the church is growing very, very rapidly. And I came away from annual conference saying, well, we need to reach out to Africa. We need to develop relationships in Africa. We have to educate the Africans. And then I came back and I started to prepare a series of sermons on hospitality and read Henry Nouwen and realized that I was doing the very same thing that the Apostle Paul tells the Galatians not to let other people do to them. That I wanted to be in relationship, but I wanted to be in relationship for an ulterior motive. To convince African United Methodists to think the way I think. I read an essay this past week entitled, "My Jehovah Witness Broke Up With Me." It was about a Christian person with a deep faith, and a Jehovah Witness came knocking at his door, and they got into a conversation, and the Jehovah's Witness offered to meet with him weekly to talk about theology and religion and life, and Tim is his name. Tim agreed. And they started meeting weekly for an hour, and they talked about faith, and they talked about the Bible, but they also talked about their lives. They talked about things in their life that they were struggling with, issues that they were facing, disappointments, joys. And Tim thought that they were becoming friends. And then he said that one day the Jehovah's Witness came and said to him, "This is our last meeting." Apparently, the Jehovah's Witness had become convinced that he would not be successful at converting Tim, so he didn't want to spend any more time or energy to be in conversation with Tim. And Tim said it made him really sad because the relationship had become important to him. And then Tim said that he began to wonder whether he had ever done this to other people, whether he had entered into relationships with other people because he had an agenda or an ulterior motive, or he wanted to try to get other people to think the way he thought. And it occurred to me that if I want to be serious about being in relationship with United Methodists in Africa who don't think the way I think, I can't do that with an agenda. I have to make room for them. I have to be who I am. I can't hide who I am. I have to be able to say what I think, what I believe, but I have to create the space for them to be who they are, in the hopes that we might, as a result of the freedom between us, be able to learn, perhaps, from each other. I want to ask you to take a minute now to think about the most difficult relationship in your life. And if anyone can't think of a difficult relationship in your life, I'd like you to come to church this week and preach to me. I'd like you to think about the most difficult relationship in your life right now. Can you be free to be who you are in that relationship? Yes, you can. Can you extend the hospitality to him or her so that he or she can be who he or she is? Yes, you can. It's possible. We can choose hospitality. We can choose to be a friend. We are tempted to say, "I can't be a friend with someone who doesn't accept me or respect me." That's not true. You can be a friend to someone who does not accept you or who you are or what you think. You can be a friend. They may not be very good at being a friend to you, but you can be a friend to them. You can be who you are without shame or embarrassment, without fudging. You can be who you are and create space in your life for them to be who they are, to think what they think, and to be who they are. We can always be a friend to another. We can choose hospitality. If we remain confident of God's love for us and God's love for them, that it's okay for me to be who I am and it's okay for him or her to be who he or she is, we can choose hospitality. We can choose to be a friend. I had a therapist once. And I'd go to the therapist from time to time and complain about somebody else. And after I was done complaining about whoever I was complaining about, he would say to me, "That's very interesting. That's a good beginning of our conversation about your problem. That's a good beginning of our conversation about your problem."